Elder Arnold Cunningham had a bad habit. "I lie a lot," Elder Cunningham tells Elder Price, right as the young Mormon men were about set to leave on their 2 years in mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Cunningham's dad said, "He just makes things up sometimes when he doesn't know what to say." Elder Cunningham says, "Bishop Donahue says it's because I have no self-esteem and desperately want to fit in with my peers." Elder Donahue turned out to be a lie, too. For Arnold Cunningham, lying was a way of life. He seems at the beginning to be a jester-like character in the Broadway play, The Book of Mormon. But he becomes the carrier for a biting satire of all religious belief. Not just what Mormons believe, but what all of us religious types believe. Elder Cunningham's lies in the play meld together with all sorts of lies that have defined the nature of religious belief through time. In the end, how can we possibly know what to believe? Especially when so much of what it means to believe seems far from believable in a world as harsh and cruel as ours can be. If you've seen the play, then you know how sharp and raw its ridicule of religious belief is. If you haven't seen the play, trust me, it pulls no punches when it comes to ridiculing what it is to be religious. The Apostle Paul had never been to Colossae. He knew that church only from afar, and they, of course, knew him. A teacher, a leader, a church planter, a doctrinal clarifier. Before the church had even given birth to orthodoxy, before the church had bishops or presbyters or tribunals and or scriptures of our own to parse or to quarrel about, before all of that, Paul was theologian and tribunal at large, reaching out to churches all over the ancient Mediterranean region with sometimes gentle and sometimes not so gentle correction about the ways they were following Jesus. This letter to the Colossian church doesn't really have the personal ring to it that many of Paul's letters do. There is at times an almost detached tone to it. He lays out his argument in response to a crisis he has heard about, a crisis of understanding, a crisis of belief. Scholarship suggests that Paul wrote this letter from prison. Paul knew the price of belief. He was determined to stay the course. So this letter is defensive. It's an apologetics of sort, calling the church in Colossae to task for losing track of the power and uniqueness of Jesus Christ. "Do not lie to one another," Paul says, "seeing that you have stripped off the old self with its practices and have clothed yourselves with the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge according to the image of its creator." You see, the crisis in Colossae came down to Jesus and how much people there in that church actually trusted the power of what Jesus had accomplished. You see, Colossae was this diverse and dynamic city. There were practitioners of many different faiths living in close proximity to each other. The letter makes reference to some of these competing worldviews that Paul was really fearful were watering down the church. In Colossae, there were Jesus followers who were also following some practices of some of these other belief systems. Some of these belief systems told them that they had to deny themselves of food and engage in extreme asceticism. Some of these other worldviews told those Jesus followers that their lives were nothing more than pawns in a game of fate written in the stars. And still some others of these worldviews told these churchgoers that Jesus' humanity was only a facade, that God only appeared or seemed to become human. These competing claims and systems of belief were leading Jesus' followers in Colossae to go back to some old habits, some old ways of putting their trust in what Paul says are human constructs, like extreme fasting, or reading the stars for what the future holds, or thinking the promises of Jesus were only for a select few. But Paul tells the church there, no more lies. Jesus following is about freedom. It's about liberation from the oppression of hating the world, or hating how we're made, or hating other people who don't look like us or eat like us or come from the same place as us. Now, Hosea's prophetic words are really about believing that God is not wrathful or out to destroy us for our wayward ways, but that God loves us with the gentleness and fidelity of a parent. We refuse to come back to God, even as God leads us with, quote, bands of kindness, with cords of love. Our wayward ways kindle compassion in God, not wrath. Hosea's words call us to trust, to believe in a love that will not let us go, even when we refuse to believe. The lies we tell ourselves and each other don't destroy God's love. They diminish our lives. And that's exactly what Paul's letter wants the anxious church in Colossae to remember. Following Jesus is life-enhancing. And if you're not experiencing the life-giving freedom that comes from following Jesus, then you're missing the point. You're living a lie. So I wonder, where did the church get off track? Not just the church in Colossae, but the church universal. Where did the church get off track with the nature of belief? Where did belief get confused with certainty, with conformity, or with closing ranks? In the Book of Mormon, Elder Cunningham is faced with a dilemma. People in crisis are looking to him for answers, for guidance, for relief from their suffering. And the truth is, Elder Cunningham's never even read the Book of Mormon, the book he's been dispatched to tell people in Ghana about, the book he's supposed to tell them can change their lives. So when push comes to shove and they're firing all their questions at him, he lies. He makes up stories about what it says in the book to respond to the very real pain that's in front of him. Now, the absurdity of it all that ensues from there is pretty hard-hitting. It forces any believer to take a disturbing look at what we believe and why we believe it. Do we believe because we're supposed to? Do we believe because we think in the end that belief will get us everything we want? Do we believe because we're afraid of what might happen if we don't, like going to Mormon hell, which is depicted in the play with the same absurdity and raunchiness that defines the rest of the play? Or do we believe because we're actually willing to stake our lives on the possibility that the world can be healed? That the world really can be redeemed. What do you believe? And why do you believe it? How does what you believe translate into your way of life in a world as cruel as ours can be? How do our beliefs get us a way forward in the face of another mass shooting? This time in a Walmart, crowded with over 3,000 people on a back-to-school shopping day in El Paso, Texas, by a white man who just wanted to kill immigrants. And then just several hours later, another white man opens fire in a popular entertainment district in Dayton, Ohio. How do our beliefs empower us to respond to this horrendous sickness in our culture with more than thoughts and prayers? How do our beliefs interrupt systems of oppression and violence toward black and brown bodies, toward indigenous and immigrant bodies, toward female bodies and differently abled bodies and LGBTQ bodies, toward impoverished bodies? How do our beliefs meet people in the pain of addiction and broken relationships and mental illness and cancer and chronic pain and isolation and grief and despair and loneliness? How do our beliefs make meaning and bring healing in this broken world? Answers can be hard to come by. And I'll be honest, sometimes all I can do is go outside and look up, to look up at the night sky. Because you know, the stars don't lie. You look up and you remember once again how expansive and infinite the world is. The stars remind us that we are small and that we're part of a big story of which we only know a tiny part. People have asked the stars through the ages to give us answers, to show us the way, to make meaning out of mystery. And we might scoff at that, turning to the stars for answers. But think about it. The faith tradition that we say defines us began with the story of a wild star, calling wise people and working people and desperate people and people just trying to stand up and be counted. All of us were invited by that star into a new direction of how to live on this planet. The story that defines us began with a strange dream and an unlikely healing opportunity somehow written in those stars. It's a crazy story, really. A baby born in a barn that would save the world. A wandering teacher who spoke truth to power and crossed social boundaries and healed our brokenness ends up executed. Life out of death, God amongst humans, compassion in the face of cruelty. This is a story not strong on plausibility. But siblings in Christ, it's a story that excels at promising possibilities. The faith that we say defines us begins with believing in a God who is not far away, but who walks in our shoes. A God who finds a way to make and keep life in a world that is seemingly God-forsaken sometimes. The truth is, belief really is a choice. It's a choice you and I make every day. And it can't come down to doctrines and creeds and the church you call home. The choice we make every day to believe is about you and me deciding to stop with the lies. The lies that say we don't need the universe to be defined by love. The lies that say the way we treat each other doesn't matter. The lies that tell us just to put our heads down and ignore the pain of the world. The lies that tell us that accumulating more things will make us worthy. The lies that tell us we need to be numb to it all to get through it. All those lies that tell us there is no God, there is no purpose, there is no greater meaning that lays claim to our lives. Those are the lies we choose to stop telling ourselves and each other when we choose to believe. To believe in a God who loves us so much that proximity to our suffering is what God chooses every single day. This is the truth that awaits us at this table that Christ prepares for us, the table that tells us the truth about who we really are. We are children of a living, breathing, healing, redeeming God. This is the table where we're fed with the truth of enough in a world of greed. This is a table that feeds us with the truth of welcome in a world that builds walls. This is a table that feeds us with the truth of Christ's freedom in a world of mass incarceration. This table helps us to taste and see that God's love is changing the world even now, even here, today, when you and I decide to stop lying and to keep trying to follow Jesus toward a better world. Thanks be to God.